storms, hails, famines, and even the plague, today we talk medieval disasters. Hello and welcome to the Medieval Grad Podcast. It's a podcast brought to you by medievalists.net, where we meet and chat with graduate students and early career researchers to learn about the new trends in medieval studies. I'm Lucie Lemonnier, a medieval historian and the podcast's host, and today we're talking with Brian Foreman, who received his PhD in history from Northwestern University in June 2021. Hello, Brian. Thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Lucy. It's a pleasure to be here today.
So, Brian, for a start, what sparked your interest for like environmental studies or climate history?
I entered graduate school looking to study witchcraft trials. And I took a course with Professor Edward Muir on early modern history, and I ended up reading a book by Jeffrey Parker on how the Little Ice Age in the 17th century really contributed to all sorts of historical events, and that really piqued my interest. But I think the more interesting story is how I came to the south of France in particular. So when I started looking at stuff for my dissertation, I went to Europe, in particular to France. I was looking primarily in the French Alps and wasn't really finding anything in the local archives there that really piqued my interest. And at the same time, I was actually very ill. And so because of the illness, I decided to travel down to Marseille, where I knew there were very good archives, as well as medical attention if I needed it, and an American consulate. I spent a few days in the archives there, and one of those days, this is in late June, early July, I can't remember the exact date, there was suddenly these black clouds just started rolling in. I asked the archivist, you're like, hey, what's going on? And they had no idea. By the time I got back to my hotel room, you couldn't breathe outside because there were some forest fires nearby. And so I figured between the illness and the forest fires, that was a sign that I needed to do Southern French history.
Oh,
indeed.
So as you mentioned, your dissertation looks at natural disasters in the late medieval Midi, which is the name of the south of France. And people who lived in the 14th and 15th century did experience quite a lot of hardships. Would you paint a broad picture of the plagues, famines, storms, war, and other calamities of the times?
Of course. So probably the big one, in particular in today's, shall we say, climate that we're thinking about all the time is, of course, pandemics. And so during this period, you have the emergence of bubonic plague with the Black Death in 1347, 1348, and then subsequent reoccurrences of the plague all the way into the 18th century in Marseille. You also have the beginning of the Little Ice Age. Kind of in the late 13th century, you start seeing the beginnings of it, but it really becomes prominent in the 14th century. And in the south of France, it primarily manifests itself in periods of more climate variability, as well as extreme weather events. So you have rapid swings in very cold years to very hot and dry years. You have rivers such as the Rhone, which are icebound for near Avignon and Arles, which is a very rare occurrence today. And you have all sorts of droughts, storms, weather events that happen, but at a more frequent level. And that causes all sorts of issues. You also have endemic warfare during this period. So primarily through the Hundred Years' War, even though the main battles did not occur in Languedoc or Provence, you have spillover of various mercenary companies, thugs, and bandits into the region, as well as various civil wars in the county of Provence. And then finally, all these things come together to really wreak havoc on the grain supply. And there's a series of famines in the 14th century. In the first half of the 14th century, from about 1318 to about the period of the Black Death, 1348, there are six major famines in Marseille alone. And this is despite a number of really large gaps in the historical record, but nearby locations are reporting famines. So this is just a kind of glimpse into the 14th century, which in general is probably not one of the times you would want to be alive for these reasons. But at the same time, I think there's a lot more to this story than just gloom and catastrophe.
Yes, and allow me to go off track. I think that we get this idea of catastrophes because, well, it's the case, but from the perspective and from the point of view of people who are living at the time, you would have maybe one horrible event every 2 or 3 years. So life just went on and they learned to live with it.
Right. And definitely one of the things you see is the creation of new institutions, as well as ways of adapting and proving resilient to the increased frequency of disasters in this era.
Yeah. And so a general assumption would be that medieval people would perceive all these hardships as God's punishment for their sins. Do you think it was indeed the case?
So there's always an assumption people have that everything in the Middle Ages is related to religion, and any bad thing that happened is obviously God punishing them for their sins. And this idea certainly exists. There's many different examples in the south of France that use that exact precise language, but oftentimes things were a lot more nuanced, and you could have these explanations that exist alongside this wrath of God explanation. So for instance, in Marseille, there's a period of drought. We have a supplication that talks about, because God is not responding to our prayers, our supplications, can we go ahead and tap a local spring? So this is from a series of farmers that are sending this supplication to the town council of Marseille. And so you see right there, we have a practical response as well as a kind of a wrath of God type response. We're going to continue with the prayers. We're also going to try to implement this temporary solution. You see, in the same register, there'll be episodes of flood in which they'll be viewed as natural occurrences, and the response to these disasters is more or less, well, because they're natural, we just need to improve the irrigation systems. So there's definitely a very nuanced perspective that is often lost when we assume that it's only because of the only explanation was the wrath of God.
It enables also city councils to adapt their responses, which we are going to talk about in just a few minutes. Now let's turn now to your sources. As you said, you looked at the city of Montpellier, which is in Languedoc. It's kind of 10 kilometers away from the Mediterranean. And you also looked at Marseille, which is in Provence, and it's a port directly on the Mediterranean. So tell us what sources you have analyzed for your research, and also what they told you about, your research topic, so disasters and responses to disasters.
So one of the things that I consciously tried early in this project was to create a composite picture of the different ways in which cities responded to disasters broadly conceived. And so part of the reason for choosing both Montpellier and Marseille is they had very different sources, but also very interesting sources that were able to draw comparisons. So in the case of Montpellier, I worked with two types of sources. Number one is there's these fantastic series of letters, supplications, and petitions that they sent to the French crown in Paris, advocating on behalf of the city regarding natural disasters. And two, there's Montpellier's very unique for having a series of very rich town cartularies, which will contain statues, privileges, but especially for my case, the Town Chronicle of Montpellier, which is a fascinating source that tells us all about these very elaborate ritual responses to disasters, particularly in the late 14th century. In terms of Marseille, they have very rich public proclamations that were redacted in Occitan, as were incidentally most of the town cartularies in Montpellier that I previously mentioned, which are kind of good for seeing the way disaster responses were implemented. And there's also a series of town council deliberations in which you're able to really get into the minutes of how these government officials were thinking about disaster responses during the time.
So you study natural disasters with a focus on how these two cities, Montpellier and Marseille, responded to them. And in your work, you also argue that the crisis had a great impact on local governance by changing some of the practices. Let's start first with the responses to disasters. We know that cities organize processions and religious celebrations. They purchase wheat to feed a starving population. They built and maintained infrastructure to prevent floods or improve irrigation. So what typology of responses to disasters did you identify in the sources you looked at?
I think the typology that really unites everything together here is kind of a collective responses to disasters, particularly termed under and influenced by this idea notion of the common good. So to back up for 1 second, the common good, of course, refers to actions taken by cities to better the population, to benefit the entire community. And during the 12th, 13th century, a lot of these ideas that we would associate with the common good and its management were not under the purview of cities. So they would be organized by various charitable organizations, confraternities, the church, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so things such as charity, public health, infrastructure, various elements of local religion, most of which we would consider as parts of the so-called common good even today, became increasingly in the 14th and especially in the 15th century to be under the purview of cities. Now, these disasters, because cities were really the only kind of governmental institution that had the expertise as well as the wherewithal to respond to the challenges that disasters created, they were able to step up and create and organize the responses and create the various institutions that were necessary to provide for the community during a time of disaster. And these were oftentimes explicitly framed under the category of we need to provide for the common good of the community.
Okay. And so what type of responses did you see? I mean, practically.
In terms of responses, it really depends on location, and location by location, as well as the types of sources that you're looking at. So one of the interesting distinctions is if you look at one source, for instance, the Town Chronicle of Montpellier, it will discuss all different types of responses they had to a disaster. If you look at some of the letters from the same period, they'll also give you other types of responses to a disaster. So one source might not give you the complete picture. So in the case of Montpellier, you might have a flood, and so they'll talk about various processions they may have had to mitigate the flood. And then in the other sources in the letters, you have all sorts of petitions asking for special taxes to be raised or taxes to be lowered, tax abatements from the French crown, in order to pay for the repairs or because the flood and various other disasters wiped out so much of the economic productivity of the region. So on the one hand, you have processions as well as other kind of practical governmental responses. But you also get an example. So for instance, during a famine in Marseille, you'll have all sorts of interesting responses. So for instance, they'll put price controls up, as well as they would actually equip and arm ships, or alternatively wait for the ships to be chased into the harbor because of winter storms. And they would claim through the privileges accorded to them by the Angevin kings of Naples, they would proclaim the ability to seize any grain ships. They would offer compensation, but you could see why various merchant ships were not very happy about that. And so you have these interesting episodes of grain piracy, which were another potential response that was undertaken in their mind for the benefit of the common good of the community.
It's really interesting. And before we move on to the question about the changes in practice of governance, I would like to ask a quick question about prevention of crisis. Did civic authorities do anything to prevent disasters when they saw them coming?
That's a that's an interesting question. So oftentimes there are two possible responses to that. So the first one, which I think is clear, is in examples of famine, they can see it coming usually by the fall when they have a bad harvest. And so they can kind of start making the predictions that there's going to be famine happening. And so that's when they'll start sending out scouts to various locations to try to buy grain ahead of time, put various price controls on grain, try to forbid its export, et cetera, et cetera. So this is in Marseille. But oftentimes they would also put preventative measures from kind of a religious angle. So much of the liturgical calendar, when you look at it during this time, is organized around environmental protection. And even if it's not explicitly about environmental protection, it's very much geared towards creating the kind of bonds of solidarity and community that would allow individuals to survive in the event of a crisis. So, of course, the obvious famous example are the various Rogation Days ceremonies, which existed, of course, in both Marseille and Montpellier, which were explicitly about the protection of crops. These take place during the spring. And so it's the protection of the harvest, indeed, when it's at its most, approximately when it's at its most vulnerable, very early in the process. And so you have kind of a dualism in which there's various religious responses that would take place to try to prevent catastrophe, as well as if they could see it coming, various, I hate using the word practical responses because it's assuming a certain level of anachronism, but these various responses to also take steps in the direction of prevention.
And how did these disasters change practices of governance?
I think there's two concrete examples that I can give that I think really will illustrate the way that disasters changed civic governance in the latter Middle Ages. So in Marseille, because of the experience of repeated famines in the first half of the 14th century, as well as the more immediate threat that emerged with the Hundred Years' War and the various outbreaks of mercenary activity, banditry, and general thuggery that was associated with the Hundred Years' War, they created an office that's known in French as the Six de la Guerre, which was originally designed for managing military affairs. So again, in reference to this notion of the common good and the benefit of the entire community, but also because famine is oftentimes tied up with war as well as natural disasters, it became responsible for providing grain as well as collecting the taxes that were necessary to finance both grain supply as well as local defense. And by the time, and so throughout the 14th century, to quote one French historian, this office of the Six de la Guerre doesn't cease to grow in importance and power during this era. And so you see how the experience of disasters was able to create a new governmental office that really changed the way Marseille functioned as a city. Now, in the case of Montpellier, you have the interesting experience of various storms and flooding events. So a quick aside, Montpellier, and for that matter, the rival port of Aigues-Mortes during this period, which was founded by Saint-Louis in the mid-13th century, are both located near a series of lagoons that will and channels that will constantly shift with the changing tides and floods. So Montpellier would cite that, oh, well, this storm created this fantastic opportunity for us. There is this new channel. If we develop this new channel, it will increase the economic output of the area. And it's far better to have port facilities at this new channel than, say, at Aigues-Mortes, which is in the Camargue region of the Rhone River Delta. It's constantly changing. In hindsight, we can look, it's probably not a great spot for a port. And so they were able to use disasters as kind of a evidence for when they would appeal for various governmental policies from the French crown. So we need to be able to collect taxes, for instance, in order to pay for these new exciting commercial opportunities that would arrive from the fortune that natural disasters have provided. So in a kind of a paradoxical way, natural disasters were able to be a benefit as well as a boon for these cities, but it allowed them to kind of cite as evidence in their correspondence and their relationship with the French crown and really kind of be able to advocate for their cities for various policies that they would have considered beneficial.
Thank you. So we'll move on to the last question, which is kind of the conclusion question. And my question is, what advice would you give to a prospective grad student, or, so you choose which one you want to do, or to someone who's about to finish their dissertation, because you finished quite recently?
Right. So I say for any prospective graduate students, I think the number one thing I would say is, you should above all try to, it's a long process. You're going to spend 3, 5, 7 years, potentially longer. It's a long process. Do something that excites you. Do something that you feel like that you want to talk with other people about, because it'll make those long days in the archives or the library so much more enjoyable if it's something you genuinely enjoy.
Yeah, true. Thank you very much, Brian.
Thank you for having me.
This was Brian Forman, who holds a PhD in history from Northwestern University. You can find out more about Brian in the show notes. Stay with us because the episode isn't over yet. Let's bring in Peter Konieczny from medievalists.net. Hi, Peter. How are you? What did you think of the interview?
Hi, I'm doing pretty good. I loved listening to this episode. I've always had a kind of fascination on disasters, floods, famine, fire. I don't know why. I'm morose, but I like how he talks about the idea that like the disaster, the response to disasters isn't, you know, kind of just religious, but is also practical and often a mix of the two. And I remember we had a little bit of news last year about this flooding that kept on happening in Valencia, in like the city of Valencia, where, you know, at the early responses in like the 14th century, when we have records from the city, at like first they're kind of just blaming it on garbage, right? Like, this garbage is all the residents' fault. You throw too much trash into our canals. So get it cleaned up. And that was kind of the, but then by like in the 15th century, it really changes where they're having a much more religious response. And when we say like the town council is going to go, we say, oh, let's do a procession around the city, right? Or let's go ask the monastery north of us to, you know, say a bunch of prayers.
Yeah.
Right. So it's interesting like how, you know, they do respond. I was kind of fascinated that there's, basically, in Marseille, like sending out pirates to get grain.
Yeah,
that's the response. So, but yeah, it was a really really cool look at that. So
yes, and I was really delighted to actually talk to Brian, because we had exchanged emails when he was doing his PhD dissertation, because I also work on Montpellier and he also work on Montpellier. So we had exchanged messages about the archives, what I was doing, what he was doing, and we always intended to actually meet or talk. And so that was a great opportunity. And I was so happy to hear about not only, of course, Montpellier, but other southern French cities, and seeing that, well, there is this culture of responding to disasters, as you said, which are always a mixture between religious responses, so prayers, processions, sometimes the relics are kind of taken out of the churches to be walked around the city to protect the city. And at the same time, of course, very practical responses. If everyone is hungry, you need to try to talk to God, and you need to buy grain. Municipalities were trying to take good care of their community, both religiously and in practicality.
Yeah, like, and it's something you actually kind of still see today, where, you know, that you do find those kind of responses. Although they don't necessarily come from the same people, right? Like now we kind of have a, like where authorities, you know, can be like where secular or ecclesiastic, you know, they'll have, you know, they'll have different areas, but they, you know, you often see that kind of like, you know, say prayers, but at the same time, they're raising money, right? So so this, it's a very common thing. So I'm not surprised, but it's really fascinating to look at how it is, it's the similarities back in the Middle Ages.
Absolutely. And it's still, I mean, governments are supposed, I guess, to rule for what was called in the Middle Ages the common good. It's still pretty much the case today. But back then, also encompassed religious responses. So it was part of the common good. And some historians dubbed this phenomenon of, you know, secular authorities organizing processions, civic religion, but it was simply just taking on the religious matters in their own hands for the good of their community.
Yeah, and you also have to keep in mind that a lot of these authorities derive at least a part of their power from religion, from the church, so like they have to kind of keep both fields open, right? When they're doing that.
So, do you have nice stories about fires, floods, or famines on medievalism?
Yeah,
very funny stories.
We do have like this like a top 10 list of medieval disasters.
Cool.
And in some of them, you know, like some of these kind of floods and things like that, like we have like stories of tornadoes and things like that, or, you know, the great wind that, you know, that came down. But so yeah, you can check that out on the site. Top 10 list.
I like the top 10 list. That's good. That's a good.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I love doing that a little bit.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Peter.
Thanks.
You are listening to the Medieval Grad Podcast, brought to you by medievalists.net. If you want to support us and this podcast, you can subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/medievalists. You can get a lot of great benefits on Patreon, including being able to hear these episodes early. We love doing the show, and we really appreciate your help. I'm Lucie Lomonier. You can find me on Instagram @thefrenchmedievalist. And you can look me up on academia.edu. Thank you very much for tuning in. Au revoir!